Church, I feel the need to comment on a certain football game, but I really don't want to, so suffice it to say, I'm glad I didn't propose the gentleman's wager to Mr. Morrison over there for exchanging sweatshirt apparel today, because I'd be standing here wearing a Penn State shirt. That'd be just awful, wouldn't it? Bart, do you have your slide to put up or not? Did you take it out? You're not saving it. Put it up now. Get it over with. Go ahead. Oh, now you've lost it. Michigan fans. Jeez. Yeah, we're going to make sure. Thank you, Bart. That's beautiful. Hey, is Toller in here? Make sure, Toller, don't schedule him on video or announcements or anything the week after Michigan, okay? Let's try to find him a place to be. Anyway, we're going to jump back into this Road of Life series today, talking about Joseph some more. Joseph, the up and down life he has, and we've noticed how it kind of matches our life. Today, we're going to get to see what I'd call a rags to riches story. I've always loved the good rags to riches story, haven't you? They're always really inspiring. One of my favorites in recent memory was a guy by the name of Ted Williams, not the baseball player. He was a homeless man in Columbus about 5 years ago. You guys might remember this story. When somebody pulls up in their car and they video him with his phone and they get him to talk. And he looks like you would expect a homeless man on the street to look. I mean, he was completely disheveled, unshaven, hair was a mess, wearing some ratty clothes. And so he approaches the car with his cardboard sign. And the guy says in his video, "Hey, I'm gonna have to hear that radio voice from you before I give you any money." And so he speaks up on this video, and despite his appearance, his voice is like butter. I mean, it's a nice, deep, solid, smooth voice, and he just sounds like a radio guy. And so this person's video that shot this video, it went viral after that, and everybody's talking about this guy. So somebody goes and gets him and cleans him up, and he starts the talk show circuit, and he begins to talk about how he became homeless and how he spent 14 years on the street because of drugs and alcohol and how it ruined his life, and he can't just seem to get back into the scheme of things, into life as it should be. And so I just Googled him yesterday because I was curious. I hadn't heard, you know, it's been about 5 years. Where is he now? And it's neat to see he's in Columbus now, again, working at a gospel radio station as a DJ there. And so Inside Edition, of all people, did a story on him, and I found that online. So a fantastic rags to riches story, and we're inspired by that. Someone who goes from being completely incapable being popular, I guess, if you will, able to take care of themselves, able to hold a job. But this is the fame that he got. It's just a neat story. We're going to see our hero Joseph today go through a very similar circumstance. He'll go from prison, rotting in a prison, to standing before the king of Egypt. And with everything that we've seen in Joseph's life, we'd have to say it's about time, right? He's been working on this, been trying to get back on his feet with everything that's happened to him. We first met Joseph when he was 17 years old, and he was overseeing his brothers in his father's fields with their sheep. He was his father's favorite, and his brothers absolutely hated him because of it. And so it's from that point on that all these different things start happening to Joseph, and we really see maybe not the magnitude, but some similarities in Joseph's ups and downs and twists and turns of all the different things that happen in his life. Now, the first thing we see, he had a couple of dreams about ruling over his family one day, and we learn from that how important it is to make sure that God's plans for your life reflect your dreams for the rest of your life. His brothers then sold him into slavery, and we recognize that on the road of life, sometimes it's those closest to us that hurt us the most. And as tragic as that is, we looked at what Joseph did and how he continued to seek God. So Joseph arrives at his new home as a slave in Egypt now, a whole new nation, and we learned from him how to resist temptation. He did a fantastic job resisting temptation there in that household, but he was still thrown in jail as a result of it. He was falsely accused and he was thrown into prison. And it's in this prison that we see him continue to seek God and serve others. Isn't this amazing? Nothing seems to really get this guy down. He continues to seek God, and he continues to serve others, even though he wasn't exactly where he wanted to be in life. So it's easy to look at Joseph's life and say he's worked hard and he's had some good situations, but he's also had some very bad experiences. In fact, one bad experience after another. But in spite of that, he's continued to seek God. He's continued to work hard, even though his circumstances right now don't really show it. And so today, finally, after hanging out with Joseph for weeks, we finally get to see his circumstances change as the opportunity he's been wanting finally comes knocking. Let's open up with a word of prayer, and then we'll take a look at this story. God, thank you so much for bringing us here today to worship you, to learn from you, to focus on you, to start our week with a declaration that you are God and we are not. To lift you up high above our own personal agendas, our own personal plans, even our own personal dreams. We come here today to worship you, to make you God in our lives. And so God, I pray that as we look at your word in this example of Joseph, that we would learn from it, that you would open our ears, you would open our minds and open our hearts, that we might leave here different people than what we came in. Pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. So as I said, last week we kind of left Joseph there in prison after he had correctly interpreted a couple of Pharaoh's staff got sent to prison, and he correctly interpreted their dreams. And so Joseph begged one of them, Pharaoh's cupbearer, to remember. We told him our dreams, and he told us what each of our dreams meant. And everything happened just as he had predicted. I was restored to my position as cupbearer and the chief baker. Well, he didn't make it. He was executed and impaled on a pole. And so Pharaoh wakes up that next morning, tells everybody he can his dream. And again, like we talked about last week, regularly there'd be wise men, magicians, seers, whatever you want to call them, whose job it was to interpret these dreams. Well, these guys either didn't or weren't able or didn't want to. I mean, this couldn't have been the first time that Pharaoh had a dream in these 2 years, but something about this dream really disturbed him. And that's what brought the cupbearer probably emotionally remembering how he felt in that dream that he had way back 2 years ago in prison. And so whatever the reason that these men couldn't interpret it, the cupbearer remembers Joseph at this point and says, hey, I forgot about this guy. You need to talk to him. And so we don't know if the cupbearer did that out of selfish motives and he was just kind of holding that back until it put him in good light with Pharaoh. Or maybe this is just God's timing working. Look at verse 14. Pharaoh sent for Joseph at once, and he was quickly brought from the prison. After he shaved and changed his clothes, he went in and he stood before Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream last night, and no one here can tell me what it means. But I've heard that when you hear about a dream, you can interpret it. It is beyond my power to do this, Joseph replied. But God can tell you what it means and set you at ease. And so finally, Joseph got the audience that he had hoped for. He's standing before Pharaoh now. He had to get cleaned up first, and this wasn't just to get cleaned up. This was to be made presentable for Pharaoh. Generally speaking, Egyptian men liked to be clean shaven, even heads. Jewish men, Hebrew men, the opposite. I mean, very, very hairy, probably had a big beard. So he was shaven and made presentable to make him more acceptable before Pharaoh, not just to get cleaned up, but to make it more likely that Pharaoh would accept him. And here's the neat thing, as Joseph stands, and I want you to imagine this, Hebrew slave that's been all cleaned up and made look like an Egyptian a little bit, standing before the king of Egypt. Joseph, even after years of languishing in prison, is still completely focused on God. Despite all that has happened in his life, despite all the ups and downs, he is focused on God and God alone. When Pharaoh gives him credit for his abilities, did you know what Joseph did? Immediately, he said, no, I can't do that. He said, that's not something I can do. Pharaoh probably looked puzzled, kind of looked at the cupbearer. The cupbearer probably got a little nervous. But Joseph goes, but God can. You see, it's God that gives me my abilities, not me. It's not me that can do it. God can tell you what it means. Joseph immediately gives the credit to God. In failure and in success now, Joseph gives the credit where the credit is due. God is still God in his life. Furthermore, don't forget that as Joseph stands before the king of Egypt here, the Pharaoh, Pharaohs were considered to be gods themselves. And so Joseph is standing here before a man who thinks he is a god and says, basically, hey, there's a god that's even more powerful than you. I mean, can you imagine the courage that would take to tell this man? I mean, Pharaoh could have done anything to him, and yet Joseph did not hesitate at all to give God the credit and to present Pharaoh that God was the answer. No matter what, God was the answer that he was looking for. And so Pharaoh goes on to repeat his dreams to Joseph. I won't read it again because it's almost exactly the same that we already read, with a couple of different phrases. It's interesting to note these differences. Pharaoh adds a lot more about these sick-looking cows. He calls them, very sick-looking, and adds a couple words than before. He says, I've never seen such sorry-looking animals in all of the land of Egypt. And he says, afterward, you wouldn't have known that they ate the fat cows because they remained just as scrawny. And he adds to the grain that it was blighted. It wasn't just shriveled and withered. It was the bad grain was blighted. And so these additions that make us think that Pharaoh was probably a little bit scared. Pharaoh was starting to feel some fear as to what these dreams might have meant. He didn't have all the details, but he possibly realized that this was bad news for Egypt. And so he's starting to get a little fearful. Not that, well, it's my suspicion that Pharaoh here had come to a recognition that he was not God. Now, that doesn't mean he wanted to go and worship God. No, that meant he was afraid he was going to be found out. You know, as a God, as a Pharaoh, you should be able to control these things. And he's not even sure what the dream means yet, but he knows enough to know this is probably bad news, and I'm going to be found out here. But Joseph has an interpretation from God for him. Verse 25, Joseph responded, "Both of Pharaoh's dreams mean the same thing. God is telling Pharaoh in advance what he is about to do. The 7 healthy cows and the 7 healthy heads of grain both represent 7 years of prosperity. The 7 thin, scrawny cows that came up later and the 7 thin heads of grain withered by the east wind represent 7 years of famine. And so this will happen just as I have described it. For God has revealed to Pharaoh in advance what he is about to do. The next 7 years will be a period of great prosperity throughout the land of Egypt. But afterward, there will be 7 years of famine, so great that all the prosperity will be forgotten in Egypt. Famine will destroy the land. This famine will be so severe that even the memory of all the good years will be erased. As for having 2 similar dreams, it means that these events have been decreed by God, and he will soon make it happen." So Pharaoh got the details now. He may not have had them all figured out before. He had a general sense that this was trouble, but now he found out he was right. This is terrible news. I mean, can you imagine? Yeah, the 7 great years, that's all good. But 7 years of famine, 7 years. A quick reminder, our bodies usually only go about a month without food before we're dead. 7 years of no food for the whole nation of Egypt. This is terrible news. And we don't connect with famine that well. Usually the closest thing we come is there's wildfire in California, so the price of our tomatoes at Kroger goes up or something like that. We just don't connect with what this means. No food, no cattle, no grain, no nothing for 7 years. 7 years of total famine. This was terrible news. And what I love about Joseph is, just like we saw last week, he doesn't try to hide it from Pharaoh. He said, "Here's what's going to happen. Bad news, terrible, terrible news." Joseph gave him these details, and it was disturbing. A 7-year famine would be absolutely devastating, the kind that would probably have erased Egypt from our history books here 3,000 years later. Would have completely wiped them out, and they just would have been a footnote in history. If he didn't do something, if Pharaoh didn't do something, then his whole nation was going to disappear. But Joseph, so true to character here, offers him some comforting advice, a plan, if you will. Look at verse 33. This is Joseph continuing to talk after these dreams. He says, "Therefore, Pharaoh should find an intelligent and wise man and put him in charge of the entire land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh should appoint supervisors over the land and let them collect 1/5 of all the crops during the 7 good years. Have them gather all the food produced in the good years that are just ahead and bring it to Pharaoh's storehouses. Store it away and guard it so that there will be food in the cities. That way there will be enough to eat when the 7 years of famine come into the land of Egypt. Otherwise, the famine will destroy the land." So Joseph has an incredible plan here. Very wise, showed that he was able to think ahead, to think outside of the box. He says, this is what Pharaoh needs to do. We have some evidence of these kind of famines in Egypt, not necessarily this one specifically, but these often happened in Egypt when the Nile would dry up for a season or two. But here we're talking about 7 years. This would be a big one, one that would starve Egypt and wipe them out if Pharaoh didn't listen. But still, I want to remind you of something as we look at this scene. This Hebrew slave that now is dressed to look like an Egyptian, standing before the king of Egypt. Pharaoh did not have him there to give him advice. Joseph just offered some unsolicited advice to the king of Egypt. Joseph had been there to interpret a dream, not tell the king of Egypt what to do. Pharaoh could have had anything done to him. He easily could have had him returned to prison. He could have had him executed. How dare you lecture me, boy, and have him sent away? I mean, he could have gone the way of that chief baker. He could have been impaled and put on a pole. So this was incredible courage for Joseph. And I think what we see from Joseph here is, you're not my God. And my God outranks you. So I don't have to be afraid of you. He didn't say that, but he thought that. That's what gave him courage. That's what can give us courage. God outranks the situations we face. Amen? He does. He still is God. So Joseph has incredible courage, not just interpreting Pharaoh's dream, but now telling Pharaoh what he should do about it. We see Pharaoh's reaction in verse 37. Joseph's suggestions were well received by Pharaoh and his officials. So Pharaoh asked his officials, can we find anyone else like this man, so obviously filled with the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has revealed the meaning of the dreams to you, clearly no one else is as intelligent or as wise as you are. You will be in charge of my court, and all my people will take orders from you. Only I, sitting on my throne, will have a higher rank than yours. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the entire land of Egypt. We're not sure what his title would have been, but it would have been like being a prime minister. He's basically becoming the CEO of Egypt. Verse 42, then Pharaoh removed his signet ring from his hand and placed it on Joseph's finger, giving him incredible executive power. He dressed him in fine linen clothing and hung a gold chain around his neck. And then he had Joseph ride in the chariot reserved for his second in command. And wherever Joseph went, the command was shouted, kneel down. So Pharaoh put Joseph in charge of all of Egypt. And Pharaoh said to him, I am Pharaoh, but no one will lift a hand or a foot in the entire land of Egypt without your approval. Wow. You talk about a rags to riches story here. This guy was in prison a few hours before this little chariot ride. I mean, this is amazing. Not only did Pharaoh not send him back to prison or not have him executed, he has now elevated him to the second in command in the land. Pharaoh basically puts him in charge of the plan that Joseph gave. And so Pharaoh must believe in this interpretation and his plan so completely because he's just put a Hebrew in charge of Egypt. He just made a Hebrew the prime minister of Egypt. And so here Joseph is made an Egyptian official in a very formal ceremony of the passing of the ring, and he gets a chariot ride around the region, and people are commanded to kneel before him. And as cool as that must have been, because that would have been awesome to see, but the most interesting thing to me is part of what he was given. Did you notice he was given nice linen clothing? Have you noticed the clothing in and out of Joseph's story here? It's good that Pharaoh gave him some because he's had a lot taken away from him, hasn't he? He's had his coat of many colors taken away by his brothers. Potiphar's wife grabbed his shirt and ripped it off of him. This guy keeps losing clothes, but now he's given these fine garments to represent the position that he's been given. Pharaoh gives him even more than these things. In verse 45, then Pharaoh gave Joseph a new Egyptian name, Zaphnath-Paneah. I think that's available for a boy name if you'd like it. He also gave him a wife whose name was Aseneth. She was the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. So Joseph took charge of the entire land of Egypt. He was 30 years old when he began serving in the court of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. And when Joseph left Pharaoh's presence, he inspected the entire land of Egypt. As predicted, for the next 7 years, the land produced bumper crops. And during those years, Joseph gathered all the crops grown in Egypt and stored the grain from the surrounding fields in the cities. He piled up huge amounts of grain like sand on the seashore. Finally, he stopped keeping records because there was too much to measure. During this time, before the first of the famine years came, two sons were born to Joseph and his wife Aseneth, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. Joseph named his older son Manasseh, for he said, God has made me forget all my troubles and everyone in my father's family. Joseph named his second son Ephraim, for he said, God has made me fruitful in the land of my grief. And so this is an amazing story. Basically, Joseph just goes about to work. He said, hey, you got the job. So Joseph goes and he tours the land. He gets systems set up. He builds silos. He builds grain houses. He makes it happen. We've already seen he's an incredible manager of people and of tasks. So he gets things together and he gets it going. We find out he was given a wife and he ends up having a couple kids. And we also find out how old he was at this point. He was 30. And so you look at that and you go, man, that is incredibly young to be put in such a high position. But then you realize when we first met Joseph, how old was he? He was 17. How long had he gone through these terrible circumstances? 13 years. He'd been a slave, been sold, worked in Potiphar's house, thrown into prison. Who knows how long he was in there before these guys came, and then 2 years more in the prison waiting to get out. 13 years of incredibly difficult circumstances that he didn't necessarily deserve or bring upon himself. It's interesting, this new Egyptian name that he's given, we actually never really read it again. And we never really hear of his wife again. We, of course, hear of his sons. I find it interesting that his father-in-law, his wife's father, was the priest of On, a very respected god of Egypt. I think I read somewhere that it was like the second god down in the tier. Can you imagine these family gatherings then when he's arguing with his father-in-law about religion? Because Joseph never shut up about the one true God, about Yahweh. And so I imagine he had all kinds of conversations. It must have been very interesting, but he just never stopped talking about God, never stopped crediting God for what he'd done. Even his son's names. His eldest meant, God has made me forget my troubles. His younger son meant, God has made me fruitful in this, the land of my grief. In other words, I mean, get that picture. He recognized that God had made me fruitful in a land where I've felt awful. I've been depressed. I've been down. And he continues to credit God with his story. Let's finish the story and then we'll find a couple things that we can learn for our lives. Verse 53. At last, the 7 years of bumper crops throughout the land of Egypt came to an end. Then the 7 years of famine began, just as Joseph had predicted. The famine also struck all the surrounding countries. But throughout Egypt, there was plenty of food. Eventually, however, the famine spread throughout the land of Egypt as well. And when the people cried out to Pharaoh for food, he told them, go to Joseph and do whatever he tells you. So with severe famine everywhere, Joseph opened up the storehouses and he distributed grain to the Egyptians. For the famine was severe throughout the land of Egypt. And people from all around came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe throughout the entire world. And so this is where we'll pick it up next week. And there's a fun little bit of foreshadowing there, isn't there? If you know the story and you know where it's going, it kind of leaves us in this chapter with the idea that everybody had to come buy grain from Egypt because the whole world was having a famine. So that's where we'll pick it up next week and we'll see what happens after that. But let's just talk about this story now and what we can pull from this for our own roads of life. All the navigating we've got to do, all the ups and downs, all the detours that we have to take. What can we learn from Joseph here? And we see that his hard work and faithfulness finally paid off. Now, for 13 years he had suffered for stuff he really didn't do. But God had a purpose and a plan the entire time. He made use of Joseph's suffering here. Despite all of the ups and downs, all the positives, the negatives, the success, the failure, all of it, God remained God. Isn't that amazing? I think what we see here is that when Joseph was in a pit, God was God. When Joseph was pulled out of that pit and he succeeded in working at Potiphar's house and Potiphar put him in charge, who did Joseph credit all of that with? God. It was God doing it in him. Well, then he was thrown into prison. God was still God in prison. And then he was brought up and put before the king of Egypt. God was still God in his life. No matter where he went, no matter the ups, the downs, the twists, the turns, God was God to Joseph. He never gave up on Joseph, and Joseph never gave up on him. There's so much we can learn from Joseph here, but let me boil it down to just a couple points. The first thing that we learn from Joseph's story thus far is that God uses suffering. God uses suffering in our life. The pain, the difficult circumstances, the challenging things that we go to, the failures that we have. You know, we talked about last week how our culture, our society is almost just afraid of discomfort. I'm not even going to go to suffering. We're petrified of suffering, but we don't even like to be uncomfortable anymore. We're so pampered, we're so spoiled that all we pursue is comfort. We want comfort in everything that we do, to the point where we look at suffering and we go, oh, what can I do to get comfortable again? Quick, I need to be comfortable. I don't know what to do. Now, I'm not saying that we should go pursue suffering, okay? But I'm saying maybe we shouldn't run from it so fast. Maybe in the midst of our suffering, we take a breath and we go, you know what? God is still God. God is still God, even in the midst of this terrible situation. We rattled off all kinds of roadblocks last week, a messy divorce, a battle with cancer, a child who is addicted or an own personal addiction, maybe some financial difficulty. There's all kinds of things that come up. Sometimes they're our fault. Sometimes they're really just the world kind of happening to us, life just kind of happening. But God can use them no matter what in our lives for our good. Let's look at a couple of ways he uses the suffering. First, God uses suffering to make us into different people. He uses suffering to make us into different people. I think it's an interesting contrast when you look back at chapter 37 and you contrast it with chapter 41. What you see back when Joseph was telling his brothers about the dream of him ruling over them, who was that story mainly about? It's mainly about Joseph. It's like, I'm going to rule over you one day. It was all about Joseph. Well, fast forward 13 years, and all the Joseph had kind of gotten squeezed out of Joseph. There was no more Joseph left. Joseph said, now as he stood before Pharaoh, he was credited with this, and who did he say it was about? It's about God. He said, I have nothing to do with this. This is God working in your life, Pharaoh. He credited God with the success. He made it all the way through all of this suffering. All the bad that we have just draws us closer in a relationship with God, if we allow it to. Here's something I learned back when I was actually trying to build muscle. I've given up. Is if you want to build muscle, you have to increase the weight at some point. To build muscles, you have to face resistance, right? You have to do increasing weight, or if you're a runner, you have to challenge yourself a little bit more to get any better. Same is true in life, guys. We cannot grow if things stay nice and smooth. We stay the same person. When things are smooth, we think everything we're doing is just fine. So God uses suffering. He doesn't cause it all. God will never cause evil in our life. I think he causes discomfort. So these things that come into our life, God uses them to change us into a different person, just like he did Joseph, to the point where we're so squeezed out of us that we say, it's about God. It's about God in my life. God uses suffering to make us into different people. God uses suffering also so that people will know who he is. God uses suffering for people to know who he is. He makes his glory known by showing people, demonstrating in people's lives that God is God even in the difficult circumstances. That's what Joseph was showing everybody in Egypt, that even in prison, even in sickness, even in slavery, that God was still God. That's how God came to Egypt. Did you see what Pharaoh said? When Joseph gives him his plan and everything, he goes, I've never seen anybody this filled with the Spirit of God. It's only because of Joseph's suffering that Pharaoh knew. Now, I'm not saying Pharaoh came to a saving knowledge. I don't know. I don't know that he came to worship God and recognize that he wasn't. I don't know. But he knew about God because of Joseph's suffering. Your suffering is very challenging. I understand that. There's some terrible things that have happened to so many of us. But when we turn to God in the midst of that suffering, you know what it tells the world? How loving God is, how patient God is. They know God. God is glorified through our suffering. And that, you could bristle at that. Oh, that sounds like an arrogant, vengeful God that would make me suffer to make his name. He is God and we are not. His ways are higher than our ways. We cannot stand here and question God's motives. If he wants to use our suffering to glorify his name, then so be it. That was Joseph's attitude. God uses suffering in our life to make us into different people, for other people to know who he is, and finally to help others through difficult circumstances. Did you notice all of Joseph's suffering here has now led to the point where God, through Joseph, has saved Egypt, a nation that did not necessarily say he was a god. God saved Egypt through Joseph's suffering. It is through everything that Joseph went through that enabled him to say, you know what, here's the plan. This is what we need to do. And Egypt was saved as a result. Same is true in our suffering. It can actually have a purpose. Once we're through it, we can help other people. We've named a lot of nasty stuff last week. A lot of roadblocks that happen in life. And there are some, I rattled off a few of those. And sometimes they're embarrassing situations that you don't want to share from your past. But here's the thing, God wants to use them so that you can comfort others. I don't care what that was. If it was that messy divorce or homelessness or an addiction or a battle with cancer, whatever it is, guess what you are now equipped to do? Help others through suffering. Help others through similar circumstances as you had. God never wastes a hurt. Never. He will use that hurt to touch other people, to let other people know who he is. God uses suffering in our life to make us into different people, to grow us, for people to know who he is, to help others through tough circumstances. And then one second point in closing that we see from Joseph's story here is that everything happens in God's time. Can you imagine Joseph sitting there going, okay, I had this dream I believe was from God, and here I am sitting in prison 12 years later, 13 years later. God, when is this going to happen? God is never late, seldom early, always right on time. God's timing is perfect. Let me give you a what if here, just a hypothetical. What if Joseph, when they approached him about, hey, Pharaoh just had this dream and we know that you can interpret dreams and he wants you. Joseph says, forget it. I've given up on life. Maybe Joseph went as far to take his own life. He just said, you know what? I'm done with it. It's just too much suffering. Life's not worth it. Or maybe he just had this attitude now where, you know what? God has apparently given up on me, so I've given up on God. No, tell Pharaoh to interpret his own dreams. At which point he probably would have been executed. But, you know, maybe Joseph would have reached that point and just been so despondent and so despaired and such a pity party for himself that he just missed the opportunity that God had for him. And so what I wonder is sometimes do we do that? Do we get caught up in this pity party, in this, oh, woe is me, in these circumstances that we have? Or yes, they're challenging. There's no doubt about that. But God can use them in our lives if we let him. But instead, sometimes we throw ourselves a pity party and we just wallow in the mud and we say, oh, I'm just must be the worst person. God must hate me. And you know what happens? We miss the opportunities that God has for us to touch other people, to glorify his name, to lift him up, to minister to others. We miss those opportunities because we're so focused on who? Me, on myself and my pain. So that's the interesting thing about difficult circumstances. It seems like the more we dwell on them, the deeper they get. I'm not saying sweep things under a rug and go into denial and say everything's just hunky-dory. No, Joseph knew he was in bad circumstances, but he still turned to God. And he was aware enough and worshipful enough to know when God's opportunity came. Because if we've learned anything in the last few weeks, it's that of all the dictating of life we try to do and all the planning and all the preparing, none of those opportunities that we generate matter. It's only God's opportunities that matter in our lives. It's the things that God is doing in our lives that really change us, that really make a difference in this world. It's not the things we try to manufacture. Honestly, most of the time when we try to make something happen, we end up in a worse state. It's these opportunities that God brings to us that matter. Everything happens in His time. And so the goal is to move from us sitting around in despair and saying, oh, woe is me in these present circumstances, and instead continuing to worship God and give Him a chance to lead you where He wants you to go, to follow those opportunities, to move from being passive and a woe is me to being active and saying, God created me to be a light in this darkened world and I'm going to do it. So many opportunities we have that we'll miss if we just sit around and focus on our circumstances. That's why James says in James chapter 1, let me close with this, verse 2, dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. You're crazy, James. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow. For when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete, needing nothing. What a beautiful picture when you're on the back end of suffering. When you're all the way through it and you can say, God used that in my life to make me into a different person. It's in the midst of it that it's hard to see it. When you're trying to walk through mud that's, you know, 3 feet deep and you're just in up to your waist and it just, I can't get through this. I just want to give up. That's when you remind yourself that God is still God even in the midst of that mud. God is using these circumstances in your life. So take these circumstances, and James says, I don't know that I do this, this is James saying this, to count it all joy when you face these things, because God is working on you. God is using you to let people know who He is. He's using you to provide for others. What an amazing thing. I don't know what the response for you is today as we prepare to sing and respond to God. It could be an attitude change towards your current circumstances. It could be an attitude change towards something that you'd gone through in life. And as you look back, you say, you know what? God did make me into a different person, but man, I really fought it the entire time. And I'm not sure I got everything out of that I was supposed to. I don't know what the response is. That's really between you and God. But I encourage you, Matt and I will be up here. You can come talk to us if you need to prayer. You can come and pray at the altar. You can sit down in the seat you're in and pray. Maybe for some of you, it's coming to Jesus Christ for the first time. Maybe it's a recognition as you've tried to follow Christ over the years, you've done it kind of superficially, and as soon as you would say, well, okay, I want to follow Jesus, it seemed like life would start to fall apart, and you thought that's not what was supposed to happen. You were sold the lie that when you come to Jesus, your life is going to be perfectly smooth. It just doesn't happen that way, does it? And so maybe it's just a recognition that I need Jesus in my life. Even in the midst of these circumstances, God is God, and I need to be reunited with Him, and the only way I can do that is through His Son, Christ. If that's you today, I invite you to come forward and let us pray with you. Let us help you invite Christ into your life. Or fill out the card in the back of that chair in front of you. Drop it in the offering plate or the offering boxes, however you want to follow up. Like I say every week, just respond, please. Don't just sit here and say and shrug off what God is doing in your life and say, oh, woe is me. But look for these opportunities. Let's stand and sing.